You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me just tell you from the bottom of my heart what an honor it is to spend another Saturday night with you and our listening audience, and what an honor it is to spend another Saturday night with my friend Sam Dixon. The impact Sam Dixon has had on my life will be felt until both of us are no more, and I am a better man and a better activist for having known Sam Dixon. And we're going to shift gears this hour and talk a little bit about the economic ramifications of the global response to COVID-19 or the coronavirus. But I want to tie up a couple of loose ends very, very quickly and share a little bit of the feedback that came in for Sam during the last hour. But first, I always like sharing personal stories when we can on this broadcast, and I was thinking during the extended break, it's very rare that we have a guest stay 2 hours, so they have to stay through that long break in between hours. But Sam has graciously agreed to do that tonight. I was having lunch with Sam in Alabama. No, it wasn't Alabama. It was in Mississippi. It was outside Jackson, Mississippi. I was in my mid-20s. Now, I'll turn 40 next month. And I remember asking Sam at this lunch, I said, Sam, what's to keep any of these alphabet soup law enforcement organizations from just busting down our door and trumping up charges and hauling us to court and throwing us in jail? I said, what's to stop any of them from doing that? And he looked at me and he said, very little. And that was the end of the discussion. And I went back to eating my lunch. But it's true, and it's been proven more true in the 15 or so years since then. I mentioned my libel case in the last hour. I mean, I can remember talking with Sam in Texas about that. I said, we're going to win this one. Oh, you know, I don't know. As he said in the last hour, we need to abjure the court system. We need to quit putting our faith in this. And of course, he was proven right, as he so often is. But I looked at that case and I said, well, you know, the textbook definition of what constitutes libel is to allege someone is a member of the Klan. They said, I am the leader of the Klan in this published column in the Detroit News. And, I always thought we might lose the case, but I certainly didn't think that I would lose the case with the decision being handed down that read, James, the plaintiff is correct in mentioning that alleging membership in the Ku Klux Klan is the textbook definition of libel. When I read that, I thought we had won it. And then they go on to say, but Aesop's Fables reminds us that we must judge one by the company he keeps. And they actually mentioned Sam as one of my known associates in finding against me in that case. And it reshaped a precedent in libel law in the state of Michigan. So we've gone down for history for that, if nothing else. But basically, the law is whatever any given judge says it is. Now, that's what I learned in my 2-year entry into the court system. Sam, I want to wrap this up, and I want to get to some feedback for you, but I guess you would agree with that, correct?
Yes. It's a very disappointing thing as a lawyer to see. I had hoped you would win. And every once in a while, there is a case that can be won. But when you take on the media, even before we got into the corrupt state of America that is now, almost nobody ever succeeded in suing the media. The judges want to play up to the media. The first thing a judge does, and what many other judges do when a case comes in, is they lick their finger and hold it up to see which way the wind is blowing. And you know, a judge that doesn't side with the media is not going to be a judge for very long. And you know, just appalling. It's like the Southern Baptist Convention violating the most basic premises of moral, decent, ethical behavior, and coming out and pronouncing that the McMichaels are guilty. And by the rot and contamination of the morals and the legal system in our country is just, the average layperson has no conception how bad it is. Most lawyers have no conception, but they try very hard not to notice, too. They know it'd be bad for business. But like in this McMichaels thing, you have a lawyer who can't represent them, has to give an interview emphasizing, oh, I'm not representing them, because he's being threatened by other lawyers that they will financially ruin him if he represents the McMichaels.
All right, what gives you the Constitution, Sam? What made you a pillar and an example for the rest of us to follow? You have been through all of this as an attorney and as a man and as an activist and as a human being.
I don't think I'm an example to anybody.
You've never apologized. You've always...
I was told when I was a child that I was a preacher. I had to set an example. And I told my parents and Sunday school teachers that I am not an example to anybody else. And it is not my role in life to be an example. So I thank you for the compliment. Maybe I'm just defective, but you know, I caught on very quickly when I was 5 years old that my parents were fooling me or trying to, and they said that Santa Claus was real, and I've just always been like that. But in high school, when this terrible teacher Stella Hill was oohing and aahing over the goodness and sweetness of great Abraham Lincoln. I remarked, Mrs. Hill, we are sitting in a city that he burned to the ground, including hospitals, with winter coming on, people taken out of hospitals and thrown on the ground to die or to drag themselves away. And I said, we hanged Germans for that. Whereupon she sent me to the principal for criticizing Abraham Lincoln. You know, that's the kind of world that we live in. I have become to some extent unpatriotic. I've just seen how patriotism is used to deceive people. And Americans have this idea that we're the good guys. We are not the good guys. We're like every other nation on earth. We're like every other human being on earth. We are flawed people, and that means we need to start looking at ourselves, checking ourselves. By the way, an example of how dirty our legal system is. The Bar Association gives awards away to lawyers who represent unpopular causes. I think I can predict with reasonable certitude that this lawyer who's undertaken representing them, he's not going to be honored at next year's Georgia Bar Association for representing, taking a case in which he had to take a lot of heat. No. They honor people who represent groups like NOW. It's a total charade. It's just a farce.
How is time going by so quickly tonight? Well, it always does with a fantastic guest. I think Sam Bushman's pushing up our brakes or something. I mean, that surely wasn't 9 minutes. But alas, we will take a quick timeout. And when we come back with Sam Dixon, we will transition to the economic ramifications of COVID.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
So, you love talk radio? Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on 24/7 with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
TalkRight, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. TalkRight makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRight today from Google Play or the App Store.
Do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, It Ain't Gonna Happen, a book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled M-E-J.com, or call Caritas in the U.S., 205-672-2000, 205-672-2000.
Get on the show and speak with James and the gang. Call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397. And now back to tonight's show.
We really must make haste and transition into our discussion about the economic ramifications of the coronavirus response, but very quickly, and I mean as quickly as I can do it. A lot of feedback coming in for Sam tonight during his live appearance from Mike in New York. Sam is brilliant. I wish he would run for office. Well, Mike, let me tell you that Sam did run for office. He ran for lieutenant governor of the state of Georgia. We have a little bit of memorabilia festooned here in our home studio, one of which is an autographed bumper sticker from the Dixon for Lieutenant Governor campaign. I am looking at it right now as I broadcast, and Sam so graciously inscribed it to me. Alas, I wasn't old enough. I wasn't even born when that actually took place, I wasn't able to be there for Sam. Otherwise, I certainly would have been. And Sam, one of your female admirers in East Tennessee writes, "I'm staying up late for Sam. His righteous anger is stirring. It's sad he has never written a book. An autobiography would be perfect." Any chance of that, Sam?
I hope so. Samuel Johnson said that there's an autobiography in every life, or a biography in every life. And I have no illusions that I'm important, but I have seen things that most Americans have not seen, and I've seen them from a perspective that most white Americans have not seen. And I've had a lot of experiences. You mentioned about the race lieutenant governor. That was quite an experience. I'm the only candidate for political office in the state of Georgia who was denied the right to buy advertising space in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
There's a story right there.
For the supreme compliment that they had accepted advertising from all kinds of other people, but I was not to be allowed to enter buy space. Print media, by the way, can exclude political advertising. Broadcast cannot. But, I've seen all kinds of things that lawyers don't see. The fact that the federal judiciary can hand down decisions, as they did in one of my cases, a decision completely at variance with the law, involving a member of the Klan, and that they could, they have the power to do what the Stuart Kings did in the Star Chamber Court in England in the 1600s, to declare that this decision applies only to this individual, and it cannot be cited as precedent in any other court, and is not to be published. That's quite a little justice system, isn't it, Mr. and Mrs. America? Do they tell you that in eighth grade civics, that that's how your country operates? Well, it's time to open your eyes and to take a whiff and smell the coffee and understand where we really stand in modern America. Your case, I read the decision of the Michigan Supreme Appellate Court, and I learned by astonishment from these judges that you were associated with Sam Dixon, a member of the Ku Klux Klan. That was certainly new.
I was the leader.
I asked to paraphrase what people used to say in the House Committee investigations in the 50s. I am not now, nor never have been, a member of the Ku Klux Klan. I can't believe that was actually even in the transcript, that anybody ever alleged I was a member of the Ku Klux Klan. But those corrupt judges, they put that out there. Now, professional lying machines like the Southern Poverty Law Center, I guess they're going to say, well, the Michigan Court of Appeals found that Anthony was a member of the... What? Can you imagine judges signing their name to something that putrid? You really have to stretch your imagination to realize just how bad off America is.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. There is some value in having experienced a life worth living. And and this is another thing you say. I mean, so often the things I find myself saying on this show on any given night, even the nights you're not on, are things that I have picked up from you along the way throughout our nearly now two decades of friendship. And there is value in having gone through a life where you have found value in terms of your friendship. And I'll tell you this, I'll take a friendship with Sam Dixon over a victory in court any day.
That's the great thing about my life is I have had an amazing array of encounters, and I've met people, and I've had friendships with people that I would never have had if I had been a conventional, humdrum, typical American lawyer. I've met people from all over the world. I've met titled European aristocrats. I spent 3 days with Stalin's former secretary, one-on-one. I've had a very interesting life. It may have been an obscure and unimportant life, but it's certainly been an interesting life.
Well, I wouldn't say that, Sam. You've left. I will tell you this, because you won't say it yourself. You have had a tremendous impact on so many people, including yours truly, and I am thankful for that. And well, it might have been more peaceful if you had gone the traditional route, but I'm glad you took the path you did.
How can we reach our people at large? That's the question. Yeah. How can we break through the censorship? To some extent, the internet broke the absolute power of the media to censor everything. But they're trying to put the genie back in the bottle again. They're working very hard to make sure that dissident Americans are silenced and cannot be heard.
Well, they are, but until we are muzzled, we will continue to speak, and even through the muzzle, we will. We will do what we can with the opportunities afforded to us, and that's all any of us can do. Sam, in our archive. Go ahead.
It's just so frustrating to see what happens in our society. Here's another little example that your audience will never have heard. The district attorney in Cobb County a few years back was caught. The district attorney's office was caught having unethical meetings with a judge, in which representatives of the district attorney's office met ex parte with this judge, no presence of a defense attorney, and they discussed upcoming cases and how they could work together to get convictions. Now, is that not about the most astonishing violation of legal ethics that you can imagine? And what did the Bar Association, the much vaunted Bar Association of the state of Georgia, that has its representatives strutting around the stage at seminars talking about ethics and professionalism and how the Bar Association is upholding ethics. What did they have to say about this? Nothing. And what happened to the career of the district attorney of Cobb County who held office while this obscenity was going on, Mr. Edwards, what happened to him?
Please enlighten me.
His name is Vic Reynolds, and the system elevated this person whose office had been involved in this obscene violation of decency and the law. They elevated him to head the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, and he's now a TV star talking about the McMichaels and the Bar Association, and the media are completely silent.
You know what, though, Sam? What I always say, and it's if we can ever get to this point, but the fact remains, there are only a finite amount of true believers on either end of the political spectrum. And if and when we regain power, all of these people that we are talking about tonight will have always been true believers in our cause, and they will take the path of least resistance as they have always done in their lives, as they always will do people like that. If and when our people ever regain power, everyone else will fall in line, and that is the only solace I have.
Do we want them? Do we want them?
I don't. I would rather have the core. I would rather have the people that I associate with. I would rather have the people that have proven themselves.
I don't want them. I don't want them in my ethnostate. They don't belong.
That's a whole nother topic. Man, we could go 6 hours tonight. We may go all night long, folks. We have to talk about coronavirus at some point, though, because my archive notes are already pre-written. So we'll get to it when we come back. I promise.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state will get back up and running soon.
We've been talking about reopening and how we proceed with reopening. It's been different in different regions all across the state. We have criteria all across the state that applies to every region. There is no variance in the criteria region from region.
Brazil is now the hotspot for COVID-19. USA's John Hunt has more.
Brazil has now surpassed Russia in total number of confirmed cases with 330,890, according to Johns Hopkins University. The South American country now has the second highest number of cases globally behind only the United States. The worst hit nation in Latin America also reported over 1,000 deaths over the last 24 hours, bringing its total death toll to over 21,000.
This is USA Radio News.
Welcome to Tax Talk with Hollywood legend Bob Eubanks.
You know, as part of Hollywood for a long time, I've seen my fair share of celebrities get in trouble with the IRS. Well, there's one name I trust, the Tax Defense Group. They're the most trusted name in tax. So if you owe more than $10,000 to the IRS, you really need to call my friends at the Tax Defense Group. Ignoring the IRS is not the solution. They can garnish your paycheck, levy your bank accounts, seize your home or business. But the Tax Defense Group could put a stop to all of that and tailor a program that would reduce your tax debt to pennies on the dollar. You gotta love that. So don't just take my word for it. Call them. Find out for yourself. They offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee, and they're open 24 hours a day because they know that tax debt doesn't sleep either.
Call now for your free and confidential tax analysis from the most trusted name in tax. Call 800-832-1594. 800-832-1594.
The body of 9-year-old Alejandro Ripley has been found in a Florida canal after his mother reported she was kidnapped. Miami-Dade State's Attorney Catherine Fernandez-Rundle says the boy was not abducted. She says his mother killed him.
The tragic loss of the life of a 9-year-old boy and the loss really of any young life leaves all of us grieving. This boy's senseless death will stay with all of us.
North Texas has been pounded by storms. They've had large hail and tornadoes that are causing severe damage in the area. At least 50 businesses and dozens of homes have been damaged in the town of Bowie on Friday night, but no deaths or significant injuries have been reported. Wichita Falls was hit with hail the size of golf balls. Winds in the area were clocked at 90 miles an hour, causing structural damage in many places. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now in our 16th year on the air, and every week is a blessing and a gift from God, and I'm thankful for each and every one of these broadcasts. We are the last of our kind on the AM terrestrial radio airwaves, and it is such a privilege to be able to use what authority we have to bring guests like Sam Dixon to you, and that is what we have done tonight for the better part of 2 hours. For the last 30 minutes, we will be shifting our focus to the coronavirus. Sam and I had a really riveting discussion about this a few days ago. Sam, you told me when this first started, you said, okay, let's see where this goes. This was, of course, back in March. Where has it gone?
Well, I mean, as was predictable, the economic impact is terrifying. We in a period of 12 weeks, we have reached an unemployment level that is close to what it took years to reach in the Great Depression, and beyond anything that was reached in the Great Recession. And, you know, there's just this air of unreality as people talk about a rapid recovery and restaurants reopening. Vast numbers of small businesses will not be able to reopen, or if they reopen, they will quickly fail because they will have lost a quarter of a year's gross income. Huge numbers of businesses cannot withstand that kind of shock. And that means their employees are left off and they're let go. It means the owners of those businesses fold up. Many of them will have to file bankruptcy. They will then be unable to borrow money to open new businesses. And as these economic crises somehow seem to always pan out, America will go from a country in which a lot of people had a little to a country in which a few people are going to have a lot. And big business is going to expand because small restaurants, small individual hotels and bed and breakfasts, things like that, will be squeezed out of existence. And so people will be eating rotten food in chain restaurants, and they will be staying in sterile, boring, large corporate firms like Mitt Romney's Marriott Hotel. That's where it's going to go. You listen to some of these authority figures, Fauci and maybe and others talk about how we may have to be shut down for 12 to 18 months. Who on earth can imagine that you could shut the economy down for 12 to 18 months? And people call these people authority figures and listen to them. Common sense says this can't be done.
Sam, have you been surprised when this came out? I like you. We'll see. I was never overly concerned. The facts that I have read, the infection rate, the mortality rate, certainly once you apply the comorbidities, it hasn't necessarily been impressive for the reaction we have seen. But there are those in our ranks who, like us, typically run contrary to that which the establishment media is the narrative of the establishment media, but there is a significant, I would say minority, but still a significant minority of those, even in our own ranks, who have really taken a religious-like zeal to the narrative on coronavirus. Have you been surprised with that?
Not really. People evaluate things differently. I think they're wrong. I disagree with them, but this is not an issue on which one would expect conformity along ideological lines. What strikes me as interesting is that all of our opponents are in line on this. I see this on this Nextdoor thing. If people know what Nextdoor is, this sort of neighborhood chat thing. that the same names come up over and over again, that the people who were for Stacey Abrams, the people who are for raising taxes, all of them in lockstep were just, we must shut down. Right, Governor Kemp, plead with him to shut the state down. And then, oh, they're talking about reopening. This means this is a matter of lives. Right, the governor. Georgia must not reopen. We must keep everything shut down. And it's remarkable how these people, you know, are all in lockstep. I guess it's because they're listening to the same tainted sources of information. Their epistemology is wrong. They actually think groups like the Atlanta Journal and the New York Times and Washington Post and that these are reliable sources. So I guess they get that way, and they're all in lockstep. But this is an issue that, regardless of what one's orientation is, of left, right, conservative, liberal, you know, I'm really a liberal on more issues than I am a conservative. I don't count myself as a conservative. But, you know, this is not really an ideological issue. The question of the degree of danger of the virus is really something that ought to be resolved, be something that could be sized up based on its own facts without reference to political allegiance and ideology. But it's just largely fallen out exactly along partisan and ideological lines, with the exception of the handful of people you're talking about on our side who disagree with us.
Well, one of their contentions is that when we talk about the economic ramifications, that we're shilling for Wall Street, we're shilling for the Fed. Now, when I talk about the economic impact, I'm talking about the impact it's having on the white working class, white middle class.
Exactly, exactly. And on the small level entrepreneurial class, the average self-employed person in America makes $60,000 a year. They're not rolling in money. The reason they're self-employed is that they value the independence, and only self-employed people or blue-collar people like electricians and plumbers, they're the only people in America who are free. Someone like Alan Tucker, the lawyer who released the videotape in Brunswick and is now under attack, professional attack, from lawyers threatening to ruin his law practice because he was involved with McMichaels, they're not free. You are not free. If somebody can tell you you're fired, pack your desk, and the guard will walk through the door. You're not free unless you have your own assets and you're self-employed. This thing is not going to benefit Wall Street. You know, opening up is not going to benefit Wall Street. Staying shut down is going to benefit Wall Street. Goldman Sachs trotted somebody out several days ago to start talking about the virus and how important it is that we keep everybody shut down. Because Goldman Sachs will make a lot of money from wrecking America the way Franklin Roosevelt and his surrounding rich buddies made money in the Depression while running their mouths and having Roosevelt talk the talk about loving the working class. But all the time, he was prolonging the Depression and enabling the rich to foreclose on America. And that's how these financial crises work. The way these things work is finance capital is then able to foreclose on production capital.
There are two
types of capitalism. There's finance capitalism, Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, Jacob Schiff, people like that. And then there is production capital, and that's people like your father with a construction firm, or somebody with a guest house, or somebody with a restaurant, or somebody who makes shoes. That's production capital. And the people who own those two types of capital are very different people. And this crisis is going to enable finance capital to emerge vastly richer, as it did in 2008. As it did in 1929.
So the production capital, the people who actually work for a living, they're the ones who are going to come to terms with this. The financial capital, those who push papers around and move numbers on spreadsheets, they're not suffering at all right now, are they, Sam?
No. Well, look at Goldman Sachs and these people in the Great Recession. Thanks to Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich, the deal between the Republicans who are opposed to government regulation. That's one reason I'm not a conservative. I'm in favor of government regulation. As you know, I'm something of a socialist. I think the common good comes ahead of individual self-interest. But they changed
a racial communitarian you are.
They changed the law to allow people to get insurance policies on loans, mortgages, in which they had no interest. Some of these failed loans were insured 100 times over. And those loans were all paid thanks to the bailout. Those insurance policies all paid out with an enormous transfer of wealth.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Dixon is matchless. I think the last hour and 45 minutes has proven that once again. He has made numerous, perhaps even, well, I guess it could be counted, but countless to me anyway, over the course of the last 16 years, appearances on this program, each one better than the last, as far as I'm concerned. We'll be back with one final segment for tonight's broadcast when we come back.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped-up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Folks, you know me. After 16 years on the airwaves, you know me. I don't put a shine on people. I don't blow smoke at people. I am thankful for people, though, and I am thankful for Sam Dixon. I am thankful for the impact he has had on my life. I'm thankful for his relationship with my family. I am thankful for nights like this, conversations like this. It just reinforces why I made the decision I made as a young man to pursue the truth no matter where it would lead, and damn the consequences, damn the peace, damn the financial impact it may have had I gone another direction. This is what it's all about. This makes it worthwhile. To me, folks, it truly does. Sam, we're talking about coronavirus. We're talking, I'd like to shift the coronavirus conversation to the election prospects or the political prospects that it may have. I've shared a couple of stories about being friends with Sam Dixon and some of the behind-the-scenes accountings we've had. We exchange emails, too. I guess that should not be a surprise. I won't share much of this, but we were talking about Trump's reelection prospects a few days ago. And, Sam, you wrote, with regard to COVID-19, the numbers just aren't there. The current virus crisis doesn't matter. The support groups of the regime will go on voting solidly Democrat. Trump lost the last election by 3 million votes. He squeaked in by a fluke. Since 2016, millions of non-whites have been added to the voting rolls, and millions of old whites have died off. Then you talk about the demographic shift in Florida and Georgia specifically, and you ask rhetorically, how could it be conceivable that Trump will pick up enough votes to override this colossal demographic shift? So when the question is asked, how does this, and it is a legitimate question, because, I mean, this is a, you know, at least in my lifetime, this is a presidential election cycle like none other. I mean, Joe Biden hasn't emerged from his basement in months, and yet he's leading in most polls. Well, of course, Hillary was leading in all the polls on Election Day as well. But what does this mean for Trump, for Biden, for Republicans, for Democrats, as if it matters? But I must ask anyway.
Well, I think it's what we predicted. You know, like I said, we were right on issue after issue after issue. And starting in 1965, when Lyndon Johnson proposed changing the National Origins Immigration Act, I wrote an editorial for the Young Americans for Freedom newsletter, in which I said that this was the most important issue in the Johnson Great Society thing. This would be the definitive issue. Changing the composition of the nation is fundamental. It's like changing the kind of building materials and foundation materials in a building. It's fundamental. And we were not heard. You know, I was reprimanded by National Young Americans Freedom that this immigration is just not an issue that the Buckley Empire wanted to touch. Because it necessarily raised, the undertones of racism. And this denial has gone on for decades, as you've had liberal Republicans, system Republicans, conservative Republicans saying that Hispanics have a robust culture. They're conservative. They're going to vote Republican. Everybody in the brain says, "You, that's just not true." And so the chickens have come home to roost. The vote is just isn't there anymore. You know, it wasn't there 4 years ago. You know, Hillary won a strong victory in the popular vote, and it's worse now. And the problem is that white Americans are going to be the people listening to you. They are going to be demoralized by this. They're going to despair. Oh, Trump is through, and we can't win elections. That's what we have to get over. We have to understand that peoples go on living long after governments change. You know, the people in Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, they saw their countries cease to exist for 50, 60, 70 years. But their people continued to exist. That's the real nation. It's not a matter of the passing votes. On the first Tuesday in November, the people, the nation, is very different from the government of the territory, and our people will go on. You will find new ways to survive as we are dispossessed from government. And then a lot of this is very healthy. One of the healthiest things to come out of the Trump administration has been for the first time large numbers of the founding stock of America and related nationalities, like the Germans and the Irish, the Italians and others, and the Poles, Polish Americans, have come to see the FBI in a very different light. They're no longer the phony image of J. Edgar Hoover or Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. or Robert Stack as Elliot Ness in The Untouchables. They have seen the FBI is a political police who are not interested in justice or fairness. They're interested in serving a system. And that's a very healthy thing. For the first time, large numbers of our people have come to view the system and its police, political police, the way they ought to be viewed. Are you there?
Well, I am. I'm listening as the rest of the audience is, hoping that you won't come up for breath.
That's it. But, you know, I have to say, it's discouraging to me. I dread the day of seeing someone like Stacey Abrams as vice president and president. But then again, it'd be good to have, if Stacey Abrams were our governor, and she was trying to railroad this innocent father-son pair into jail, everybody would see what it's worth. But when it's someone like Kemp, and it's coming from a white guy, people don't see it for what it is.
Well, I agree. I mean, Republicans, we talk about this in private. I won't share too much, but I will share that I have told you, as I have told the audience at large, that my true disdain lies for those like a Brian Kemp or like a Lamar Alexander or like any of these limp-wristed, apologetic, weakling white Republicans who would hang on to power at any cost, even including in my own former denomination, you know, my own former church. They would deny their own ancestors. They would deny anything and everything to be patted on the head by those who persecute them, by those who hate them. That's whose approval they yearn for. And I don't want to be counted among them. And so I'd rather be counted among the outcasts. That's where we are.
I will tell you, we're about out of time. I'd like to tell a story. I mentioned that I've had the pleasure of knowing many interesting people in the course of being a political dissident. And two of the most interesting were Count and Countess Andrássy of Hungary. The Andrássys were at the head of the peerage of Hungary. And they had fled Hungary after the Soviet occupation. And they lived in very poor circumstances in Coral Gables, Florida, in a two-bedroom, one-bath apartment. But I got to know them very well. And I asked them, I said, it must be just terrible to have had all these palaces and been the most prominent family in Hungary and to have lost everything. And Countess Andrássy told me something which I have never forgotten. She said, "We have not lost everything. We have lost our money, but we have everything else. We have our children.
Yes.
We have our families. We have our religion." They were Catholics. We have our language, our literature, our culture. She said, "Americans, I'm sorry to say, have lost everything except their money. And when the money goes when money disappears in America, as it eventually will," she said, "the Americans will be truly bankrupt. They will have."
Well, you know what? That is a great point to end on. I would rather lose all of that other stuff than lose our nationhood, lose our identity. As long as we have that, as you mentioned, Sam, our government can change, this country can change, whatever it is, as long as we have one another, as long as we have our race, our nation, our identity, we will persist through the bad times and we will come out clean on the other side as those in Eastern Europe have, who can show us the way, and that is perhaps the key to our survival, can be found in Eastern Europe. Sam, with seconds remaining, you have the final word.
You cannot make nature politically correct. The cream will rise to the top. Nature will never be made politically correct.
Sam Dixon, my friend, it has been another appearance gone by far too quickly. Even 2 hours, not enough. We look forward to the next one already for the rest of our staff.
God bless
crew.
You
and
all of the
body. Amen. Good night to you, my brother. We will talk to you all next week. I'll be here the last week of May. We'll see you then. Good night.